Classifieds. An SBI SCPAU written by Blue000J and read by a multi-voice cast of Friends and Marshes as narrator and interviewing doctors.
Tipsy Kitty as Phil, or SCP-168912.
Aetherpunk as Dr. Toby Smith, or Tubbo.
Dia Passan as Tommy, or SCP-2015-13.
God of Laundry Baskets as Technoblade, or SCP-2538.
Little Red Robin Hood as Wilbur, or SCP-23912.
Angel Once Was as Dr. Floris.
Down the Dark Path as Dr. Nietzsche.
Raven as Alistair.
Black Glass as an unnamed Class C agent.
Jop as Inessa Vinay, site director.
And Blue00J as the administrative director.
Edited by Fens and Marshes, because I love making bad podfic decisions like doing this when I have exams. These files are for level 4 personnel or above. Any attempts to access these files without level 4 clearance will be severely punished.
Files, SCPs 168912 to 23912. Item number, SCP-168912. Object class, Euclid. Special containment procedures. SCP-168912 is contained at Containment Zone 56 at Site 23, located in an unspecified part of the United Kingdom. SCP-168912 must at all times be in the same building as SCPs 2015-13, 23912, and 2538 when SCP-2538 is present in the facility. SCP-168912 is to be held in a two-room sealed antechamber within the facility with an industrial-strength air purifier. SCP-168912 does not appear to need to eat, although enjoys doing so recreationally upon request. Meals are to be processed and then delivered if approved by a Level 3 personnel or above. The subject is to be provided bi-monthly with the following items. 1 bar of unscented soap. Organic replacements for clothing, tailored specifically to size and exactly matching previous clothing. SCP-168912 has requested the following items at random intervals. Following protocol, reasonable requests are to be granted as long as they are approved by a Level 4 employee or higher. To date, SCP-168912 has requested green and white striped bucket hat, unfulfilled. Various novels or books including The History of the Ancient World by Susan Bauer and The Art of Sword Combat by Joachim Meyer, granted. A small television with cable and DVD player, granted. DVD set of the Japanese anime series Bleach, granted. Access to SCPs 2015-13, 23912, and 2538, denied.
Edit on the 9th of Redacted. See Addendum 168912-1.
Description. Subject appears to be an older European man between the ages of 25 and 35, 2.4 meters in height and 136 kilograms in weight, not including wings. Subject has shoulder-length blonde hair and mild facial hair, as well as a thin pair of antlers that sprout from two separate points on the subject's forehead. Attempts to study these antlers indicate that any damage taken to them does not cause the subject pain and they are not made of any known biological material. Subject consistently wears a dark green shiakusho and a darker green hari over it. Subject has also requested the return of a green and white striped bucket hat that he claims was lost upon containment. Attempts to locate said hat have been unsuccessful. While active, the subject also dons a pair of traditional Japanese wooden geta or sandals. SCP-168912 has a large pair of feathered wings that originate at 2 points mid-back on either side of the spine. Subject has never been seen using these wings to fly, and currently it is unknown if the subject has the ability of flight at all.
Edit on the 8th of Redacted. As of Incident Report 122201, flight has been confirmed, although specifics have not been able to be studied. These wings follow the pattern of prey birds native to the northern United Kingdom, specifically the species Falco tenunculus, or the common kestrel. Yet, when collected, discarded feathers seem to have a purple-silver hue that is not correlated to normal birds of the species. Subject's wings are approximately 10 meters in length, although the subject is not allowed for proper examination of his wings since containment without severe casualties. The subject seems to be some sort of deity, with powers that correlate to such a comparison. Subject has some sort of sixth sense that allows him to be aware of people, things, and events that happen within a certain radius of his body, the upper limit of which seems to be about 5 kilometers. Subject has also demonstrated extreme physical prowess with the ability to tear the heads off of agents without hesitation. Discovery. SCP-168912 was discovered in England after a series of reports came into the Foundation of a winged creature roaming the streets and woods of the small town. SCP-168912 came with agents after a brief fight in which 4 agents were wounded. The subject was not physically harmed and was subdued after speaking with an agent one-on-one. See Addendum 168912-2. Access Addendum 168912-1 here. Addendum 168912-2. The following is a conversation between SCP-168912 and Dr. after being subdued outside of England. Did they tell you why you're here? They told me they explained the reasoning for your capture to you in the field. Do you understand it?
I do.
Good. Then you know it's for the whole world's benefit that you stay here with us.
I do. However, I don't particularly think that's the case.
Excuse me?
I came with you because I wanted to. Had I not wanted to, I wouldn't have. I'm here by choice. I was curious. I wanted to know why you tiny little beings think that you are better than the natural occurrences of the world, simply because you crave knowledge and order.
I don't think I understand.
You don't. This company, this foundation, it thinks it can understand the world simply through observing and studying. You think you can understand and contain whatever you don't. That's just not the way it is. There will always be things you don't understand, and things you cannot contain. The creatures lying in the overlap will be this world's eventual demise, and there is nothing you or I can do to stop it.
That's a morbid take on things. If you're so certain that what we do here won't stop it or let us understand it, then why are you here?
It might be morbid, sure, but it's true.
Maybe so. That doesn't answer why you're here, however.
I was bored. There are people I need to meet. A chapter of my life I have to live. It's important for me to be here, now.
How do you know that?
I just do.
Note, the rest of the file requires a level 3 clearance or higher to access. This clip is used to show how SCP-168912 appears to be here on his own terms and that this must be taken into consideration when interacting with the subject. Item number, SCP-2015-13. Object class, safe. Special containment procedures. SCP-2015-13 is contained at Containment Zone 56 at Site 23, located in an unspecified part of the United Kingdom. SCP-2015-13 must at all times be in the same building as SCP-168912, 23912, and 2538 when SCP-2538 is present in the facility. SCP-2015-13 is to be held in a sealed 2-room antechamber within the facility with an industrial-strength air purifier. SCP-2015-13 is to be provided with 3 meals a day, with personalized requests for meals being approved through a Level 3 employee. Loose cotton clothing is also to be provided, as well as bathing materials and other recreational activities if SCP-2015-13 requests them. As of 10, SCP-2015-13 has asked for the following items. Laptop denied. Internet access denied. Cell phone denied. Any type of PC unit, denied.
Xbox gaming system, denied. Granted, under the compromise that the system will not have internet access and games will be strictly monitored. Textbooks and other schooling items, pencils, pens, notebooks, etc., granted. Access to SCPs 16.8.9.12, 23.9.12, and 25.3.8, denied. Edited on the 9th of... See Addendum 16.8.9.12.1. Under certain circumstances, SCP-2015-13 is periodically allowed on outings with approved personnel. Outings are to be once a week into the neighbouring town, based on good behaviour and cooperation with personnel. Description: SCP-2015-13 resembles a 16-year-old British teenager. DNA and medical reports come back consistently as human, with no abnormalities noted. In every physical and medical way, the subject is human. 2015-13 is blonde with blue eyes, 6'3" in height, and 72.5 kg in weight. SCP-2015-13 is able to bring objects in and out of a temporary space he calls his inventory. When referring to this space, SCP-2015-13 is able to look into his inventory and see which items he is able to access, as well as the ones he has in storage. Current testing shows an upper limit to the inventory's capable space, with the subject not being able to hold more than 40 items at one time. When questioned about this, the subject indicated that it felt like he was
carrying a shit ton of stuff in my pockets,
and referred to the feeling as
bulky and sort of heavy.
The subject is able to materialise any of these 40 items in their hands at any moment, as well as swap out items near instantly for each other. The subject also has impressive physical prowess for a 16-year-old, showing capability in many variations of martial arts and with any weaponry given to him, despite never having had any formal training. Often, SCP-2015-13 refers to this ability as a deus ex machina. Agent Smith remarks that SCP-2015-13 seems to be reminiscent of video game characters. Further testing is being scheduled. As of now, the subject is deemed safe to interact with and has not turned any of his abilities onto personnel. As of the 5th of SCP-2015-13 has caused the death of 2 Class C personnel and the serious injury of 1 Class B personnel. Due to the fact that these incidents happened under periods of extreme duress, SCP-2015-13's object class has not changed and he is still deemed safe to interact with.
Incident Report 2015-13-01. Date the 5th of Location. After the appearance of SCP-2538 at Containment Zone 6, there was a breakout consisting of the 4 SCPs that refer to themselves as A code Superblue was called, and 4 teams of agents responded to the call to subdue. In the resulting fight, SCP-2538 and SCP-23912 were both mildly injured, and 5 agents were terminated, 4 by SCP-2538 and 1 by SCP-168912. As these types of breakouts are a frequent occurrence on X's record, routine measures were taken to subdue and return the SCPs to their containment centres. Upon seeing SCP-23912 injured, SCP-2015-13 went into a rage and demanded to stay with SCP-23912. When this request was denied, SCP-2015-13 fought back against the personnel around them and revealed 2 weapons he had somehow stored in his inventory space. SCP-2015-13 was subdued after mortally wounding 2 agents and injuring 1 other, Dr. Smith stepping in to talk him down and reassure him that SCP-23912 would be taken care of appropriately. Once calm, SCP-2015-13 was relieved of the hidden weaponry and taken back to his containment center.
Item number, SCP-23912. Object class, Euclid. Special containment procedures. SCP-23912 is contained at Containment Zone 56 at Site 23, located in an unspecified part of the United Kingdom. SCP-23912 must at all times be in the same building as SCP-168912, 2015-13, and 2538 when SCP-2538 is present in the facility. SCP-23912 is to be held in a sealed 2-room antechamber within the facility with an industrial-strength air purifier. SCP-23912 must also be provided with a large bathtub in the center of the main recreation space, measuring approximately 2x3 meters in size and which is to be refilled every day with clean fresh water. SCP-23912 is to be provided with 3 meals a day, consisting of general nutrition. Special requests are to be reviewed and subsequently denied or accepted by a Level 3 personnel or higher. New clothing will be provided every day, plain cotton fabric in the usual style. Recreational items will be provided upon request. As of now, the following items have been requested by SCP-23912. Acoustic guitar, denied. Notebook and pencil, granted. Voice recorder, denied. Access to SCPs 2015-13, 16-8-9-12, and 25-3-8, denied. Edit on the 9th of... See Addendum 16-8-9-12-1. When interacting with SCP-23912, all personnel above Class B must wear noise-cancelling earplugs. Description: SCP-23912 appears at first glance to be a 24-year-old British human male with brown hair and eyes, 6 feet 5 inches in height and 86 kilograms in weight. Closer inspection reveals a slight point to the subject's ears, as well as slightly sharper canines than a normal human. When activating his abnormality, SCP-23912's eyes change color from their regular dark brown to a sea green or blue color. Participants in experiments with the subject have also been known to come out of their encounter with the subject and report that SCP-23912's eyes appeared to them as red or purple. When immersed in water, SCP-23912 undergoes more mild physical changes. Webbing appears and connects the subject's fingers and toes, and the slight point to his ears becomes more prominent. The subject's teeth also become shark-like, and SCP-23912 has been observed to use his teeth on the offensive. The subject's eyes turn the same sea green or blue as they do when utilizing his abnormality, and they stay said color until 4 to 6 hours after drying off. The other physical abnormalities fade 1 to 2 hours after drying off. SCP-23912 is able to control the wills and minds of up to a dozen people around him by singing a particular tune of his own creation. Further testing shows that words said in a musical tone with enough intent also affects those with weak wills, however, in a much more subtle way. The subject has been known to use this ability to escape on multiple occasions, as well as influence the personnel around him in order to get benefits or receive items he was previously denied. See Incident Report 23912-01. Arguments have been made to change SCP-23912's object class to Keter. After reviewing test footage and recorded conversations with other contained SCPs, these requests have been denied. While SCP-23912 has shown propensity for escapes, the apparent emotional bond between him and other subjects has brought SCP-23912 back to containment 100% of the time. Document number 45A. Date, the 9th of... 88709D and 89233D were introduced to SCP-23912 just after mealtime. Conversation was short and stilted, eventually developing into uncomfortable silence. After about 4 to 5 minutes of silence, SCP-23912 looks at the cameras in the room and then back at the Class D personnel. SCP-23912 begins to hum. 88709D and 89233D start to look vaguely uncomfortable. 89233D shifts slightly, while 88709D stiffens visibly in their seat. A few moments after the subjects start to look uncomfortable, they immediately relax. SCP-23912 appears amused, tapping his fingers on the table in a rhythmic way for approximately 60 seconds. SCP-23912 orders 88709D and 89233D to fight, egging both subjects on and insinuating that
both of you are pussies anyway.
88709D and 89233D begin to fight, neither subject holding back. SCP-23912 watches with apparent amusement. After 2.5 minutes of 88709D and 89233D physically fighting each other, SCP-23912 slams his hand on the table. 88709D and 89233D seem to come back to themselves, relaxing in their position and then scrambling apart. SCP-23912 goes on to curse at the camera in the room, then at 88709D and 89233D. Both subjects report being confused and dazed, although whether that was from after effects of SCP-23912's song or from the head blows they received is currently under review. Neither subject suffered long-term effects from SCP-23912's control or from the injuries they sustained while fighting. Addendum.
It seems that over time, SCP-23912's ability has gotten stronger. When SCP-23912 was first brought to this facility, he was only able to control 4 people at maximum and was required to fully sing a phrase to accomplish this. Over the past 4 years, SCP-23912 has been able to claim control over up to a dozen subjects at once simply by humming in their presence. SCP-23912 is also now able to control up to 4 people simply by speaking alone. Weekly testing of his abilities surely has helped, like working out a muscle in a gym. I'd be excited to see how far we could push him, and if he would ever consider being open to helping the Foundation and our cause. More experiments are being approved as I write this. Report filed by Dr. Flores.
Incident Report 239-1201. Date, the 11th of... Location... SCP-23912 used his ability during the delivery of his lunch, convincing the Class C personnel to leave and return with an acoustic guitar, an item that had previously been requested by SCP-23912. After receiving the guitar, the subject proceeded to play music to himself in the room for an hour or so. After composing into the notebook for a while, the subject exited the containment center and charmed his way through the compound. SCP-23912 was apprehended a few miles away from the zone center by appropriately protected personnel and returned to his containment center without incident. The guitar was collected and closer surveillance was placed on SCP-23912. Item number SCP-2538. Object class, Keter. Special containment procedures. As of now, SCP-2538 is not contained. The subject's whereabouts are currently unknown, and therefore cannot be monitored. All attempts to contain SCP-2538 have led to heavy loss of life. All personnel are to be briefed on the subject when they first arrive at the center. Rebriefings will happen each month. Any sighting of the subject is to be reported immediately to a Class B personnel, and from there, steps will be taken to put the facility into lockdown and Code Red will immediately be called. Description: SCP-2538 at first glance is a human male, approximately 18 to 25 years old, most likely around 6 foot 3 inches in height and an unknown weight. The subject has long pink hair that is most commonly worn in a braid or bun, and when questioned, SCP-2015-13 has indicated that pink is not the subject's natural hair colour. The subject is seen most often in an outfit consisting of black trousers, knee-high boots, a white shirt with red sash or belt, and a long red cape. Subject has also been observed wearing a crown at times. Close encounters with SCP-2538 revealed pointed or floppy ears reminiscent of a pig and red eyes, as well as sharp teeth that are utilized when fighting. SCP-2538 has incredible stamina, strength, and shows prowess with nearly any weapon he has been provided with, as well as proficiency in hand-to-hand combat. Subject will not hesitate to take down any personnel or SCP he sees as a threat, and does so with brutal efficiency. The attempts to contain SCP-2538 led to over 100 casualties, many injuries major, and almost 70 individual deaths. After the extermination of the last site director, attempts to contain SCP-2538 were discontinued. No outside reports of slayings have been connected to SCP-2538, so it can only be assumed the subject views the Foundation as some sort of major threat. The subject appears only to return to the facility in order to communicate with SCPs 168912, 201513, and 23912, and only a few recordings exist of these interactions.
As of Incident Report 122201, one last recording has been submitted to the Foundation's records. Only Level 4 or higher personnel are able to access this recording.
Addendum 168912-1 begins here.
After looking over the reports for ages, I have finally come to the conclusion that keeping SCPs 168912, 2015-13, 23912, and 2538 apart will do more harm than good. While I struggle to pinpoint the individual moments where the subjects came into contact, it appears that over the last 4 years or so, they have created a familial dynamic between the four of them. As far as I can tell, the first meeting between any of them was 3 years ago, during one of SCP-2015-13's weekly outings. The following file will detail this meeting.
168912-1A. Clearance is required to read this file. Addendum 168912-1A. The following file was recorded on the 9th of 2 days after the first encounter between SCP-2015-13 and SCP-168912. An interview was conducted between Dr. and Class B personnel Alistair, who was present at the time of the interaction. So, Alistair, start from the beginning.
Okay, sure. It was late in the morning. I was bringing SCP-2015-13 back from his weekly outing to, and we had just entered the main containment center. SCP-2015-13 was acting normal, talking to me and just having a general chat.
What were you two talking about?
Let's see. I think it was something about films. A new movie that he was interested in. I can't really remember the name. I'm sorry.
It's all right. Mild memory loss is a fairly common symptom of severe concussions. Let me know if we need to pause, and we will.
No, it's all right. I can do this. We were talking about films and heading back to SCP-2015-13's containment rooms when we passed the hallway that branched down into SCP-168912's rooms. SCP-2015-13 stopped at the entrance of the hallway and got a look on his face, like he was going to be sick. Then the alarms went off.
The alarms to signal a code blue, yes. We have this on record as happening. What did you do?
I tried to follow procedure. I knew I needed to get Tommy back into his containment room and lock the door, and maybe myself in with him, but, before I could really move or even react to the alarms, I saw him.
Who?
SCP-168912. He was coming down the hallway right toward where we were standing. I'm a tall guy, okay? But seeing something that large coming right at me, holy shit, it was scary. Your whole body freezes up and you can't move. I've read about fight or flight before, but it's different when it's actually happening to you.
What happened when SCP-168912 reached you?
Don't you guys have it on camera?
We do. I just want to hear it from you and what your thoughts on it were.
Well, okay. So I was frozen, standing there. Tommy was right beside me the whole time, but when SCP-168912 reached me, he kind of hit me with his wing. I don't think it was intentional, looking back on it. He just took up a lot of space, and the hallway had gotten cramped. I hit the wall. I don't remember this little bit.
That's all right. From what we saw on the cameras, you were thrown into the wall and hit your head fairly hard. SCP-168912 paid no attention, but SCP-2015-13 came over and checked on you before being drawn back to SCP-168912.
Yeah, I remember. Tommy came over and was worried.
Do you remember anything else?
I know they were talking to each other. Tommy can get loud when he's upset. The other one, SCP-168912, he had a much calmer voice. It was sort of soothing. They were arguing for a minute. Then SCP-168912 said something that made Tommy calm down. I don't remember the specifics. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Can you try?
Tommy said something about knowing SCP-168912.
Did SCP-168912 react?
He sort of drew Tommy in for a hug with his arms, enveloping him, said something about the others.
What others?
I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm getting a headache.
That's all right. We can pick this up at another time. This interaction between Foundation personnel Alistair SCP-168912 and SCP-2015-13 marks the first known contact between any of the group named Alistair has been demoted to a Class B level personnel and has been transferred out of Site 23.
After this meeting, it appears that SCP-168912 initiated points of contact between all four. The first sighting of SCP-20538 happened a week after first contact on the dot. Even the timestamps are down to the second. It's as if SCP-168912 knew that the other was going to arrive, and knew he needed to start making connections. Which, given the nature of his ability, is not that far-fetched to think. Further tests must be done to research if SCP-168912 is able to see into the future. The following file is a recording of a conversation held by SCP-23912 and SCP-20538 on the first day the 20538 was sighted.
168912-1-B. Clearance is required to access this audio file. Addendum 168912-1-B. The following audio recording was taken from surveillance systems outside of SCP-23912's containment room.
Hey.
Can I help you?
You can open the door, yeah?
At this point, SCP-23912 begins to sing. He is cut off.
That's not going to work on me, you know.
Well, it was worth a shot. Let me out.
If I do, you owe me. A favor for a favor.
Sure, yeah, okay. Favor for a favor. Have you seen a tall blonde guy walking around, by the way? Big wings, hard to miss.
You mean Phil?
Oh, you know him too? Cool. Yes, Phil. Have you seen him?
No.
Visuals from the cameras in the area show that, at this point, an MTF unit enters the hallway. SCP-23912 seems to take a spot behind 20538, while the other becomes immediately defensive.
Well, can you take care of this instead of hiding like a baby?
I'm not hiding. I just work better when I'm not under enormous amounts of pressure, such as being held at gunpoint.
Just saying, oh my god.
I won't be able to affect them all.
I'll deal with the rest. It's fine.
SCP-23912 begins to sing at this point. The audio file is fully corrupted for approximately 3 minutes and 26 seconds. After that point, the file is only partially corrupted and snippets of voices can be heard.
There you two are.
Phil, you didn't say this was how it was going.
After this point, no more voices can be heard. The rest of the file is corrupt, presumably from recording SCP-23912's voice. Both SCPs seem to have knowledge of SCP-168912, whom they refer to as Phil. Once this common ground is established, the tone between the two becomes more easygoing and confident than the first few sentences. It is assumed that SCP-168912 had somehow previously informed both of the subjects to each other's existence, although how is currently unknown.
From then on, SCP-168912, 20153 and 23912 were more aggressive in their attempts to socialize. SCP-23912 was often recorded utilizing their abilities to go and speak to his friends, despite the apparent mild disdain he held for SCP-20153. When being discussed, a Class C personnel likened their interactions to those of siblings, and most personnel in the room who had older or younger siblings agreed. Interactions between SCP-168912 and the others were more subdued than between the other two, sometimes giving advice, and more often than not, sitting in a quiet but seemingly comfortable silence. SCP-201513 has been recorded as he attempted to teach SCP-168912 some modern slang terms that teenagers use, and SCP-168912 has been observed using this slang in regular conversation now.
168912-1-C. Clearance is required to access this audio file. Addendum 168912-1-C. The following conversation between SCP-201513 and SCP-168912 was recorded on the 12th of during a routine meeting between the two. In the beginning of the recording, SCP-201513 was more conversationally active, but about halfway through the session, the tenor changed to be more reciprocal.
No, see, there's this thing called the internet.
I know what the internet is, Tommy. I'm old, not stupid.
Okay. But on the internet, there are websites, and one of them is a streaming thing. You can watch videos, and people play... You know what, whatever, let's skip to the good bit.
There's going to be a good bit of this conversation?
Oh, shut up and listen. So, one of the words that people use a lot on this site is POG. POG used to be an acronym, right? But now it's sort of just its own word. You use it when you're excited or happy about something. Or if something cool happens, you call it PogChamp, POG for short.
I see. Used it in a sentence, maybe?
Last week, when Wilbur got one of the dickheads to buy him, like, 300 euro worth of vending machine candy on his card, that was fucking poggers.
Huh.
You try.
So, what if I said Wilbur doing that was not pog?
You'd be wrong, but I guess he used it right, technically.
I see. Teach me more.
The rest of the recording is restricted, but after this conversation, SCP-168912 has been observed to be using more modern language, specifically the internet slang that SCP-2015-13 has been teaching him. Dr. Smith has noted that SCP-168912 has also been observed to be more and more expressive after spending time with SCP-2015-13 and SCP-23912, and asks that more time be allotted for monitored conversation. This request has been denied.
Since the first sighting of SCP-2538 3 years ago, there have been 116 recorded sightings of the subject. Not all of them have been hostile, but the majority have ended with some sort of conflict between SCP-2538 and Foundation agents. Out of all these visits, SCP-2538 has tried to stage a breakout 49 times. None of them have so far been successful. See Incident Report 12-2201. The following file details a conversation had between a Class C Foundation personnel and SCP-2538.
168912-1-D. Clearance is required to read this file. Addendum 168912-1-D. The following audio was retrieved from a personal recorder carried by Class C Agent.
God, fucking damn it. Alright, this is Agent with Lab F. A code red has been called due to the appearance of SCP-2538. But all my exits have been blocked. I think there's... Shit, fuck. Okay, I think it's gone. SCP-23912 just passed by the door. Which is bad. I don't know how many of the subjects are out of containment, but if I had to guess, it would be at least 3. While this shit should seem routine by now, it's not. It's really, really not. It's like they just want chaos, picking a day and deciding to fuck all of us over. There's someone at the door. Fuck. If I don't make it out of this room, I want 2 things to be known. 1, Cassie, I love you, baby girl. 2, fuck the Foundation.
You're just going to sit there. You have a gun. Try and use it.
What?
Not the point of this is to have fun. You sitting there won't be fun. It'll be morbid and boring and annoying. You'll ruin my mood. I was in a good mood.
I don't...
Bruh, shut up.
Wait, no, don't!
Huh. You hit me. Nice shot. I'll give you that.
It didn't do anything? What was the point? What?
It was for fun.
Agent was found in the storage room with a gash to the neck, alive but unresponsive. Currently, the agent is undergoing treatment at and is expected to live. Once it is more appropriate, further questioning will take place about this encounter.
Multiple things can be learned from this encounter. First, SCP-2538 has some way of defending himself against bullets and injury. This is not unknown, but this is the first example we have of SCP-2538 acknowledging that they have been wounded and even admiring the shot. If anything, this indicates a high level of danger since we do not know where that bullet was placed or if SCP-2538 is even able to be killed via normal weaponry. Second, SCP-2538 refers to these instances of breakouts and chaos as fun, although it is only half of the reason he states for doing so. SCP-2538 definitely has some sociopathic or psychopathic tendencies. However, without close study, it's unknown if this is due to the subject's anomalies or this is a pre-existing condition. It also begs the question, what are the other reasons SCP-2538 commits these acts? Report filed by Dr. Flores. One more comment before I end this addendum. Personnel have been observing a budding friendship between Prodigy Foundation personnel Dr. Toby Smith and SCP-2015-13. Any interactions between the two must be recorded or monitored, and Dr. Smith is not to be left alone with SCP-2015-13. It is unknown what SCP-2015-13's intentions are by making friends with one of the personnel working his research, but whatever it is must be watched closely. Dr. Smith is not to be informed of this surveillance. The following is an audio file that was recorded via a bug in Dr. Smith's lab coat.
1689121E. Clearance is required to access this audio file. Addendum 1689121E. The following is a section of recording pulled from a wire on Dr. Toby Smith's body during one of the unsupervised visitations with SCP-2015-13.
Hey, Tommy!
Well, if it isn't the big man himself. You're late, you know. 2 minutes and 26 seconds off.
Stepping. I know, I'm sorry. I was in the toilet. The porcelain throne called my name, and I could not resist.
Tobo, you are so fucking weird.
Is this the guy who can carry, like, 40 things in his invisible pocket?
Oh, don't you dare insult my inventory. I'll have you know it's nice and clean and organized right now. Look, I've got this piece of fabric, and this pencil, and a feather from Phil, and...
Wait, how did you get a feather from Phil? I thought the containment units were on lockdown until next week.
We get special permission. Us... have to stick together after all. If we don't, well, shit goes boom, and I get shit to stab.
Stab and smash, right?
Damn right.
Still doesn't explain the feather.
I got it 2 weeks ago. Kind of forgot it was in there, honestly.
Oh. You're so dumb, you know that?
What? Excuse me? How dare you?
It's just the truth. I'm really smarter than you.
Maybe if we took an IQ test, sure. Have you ever taken an IQ test, Tubbo?
Probably at some point, but I don't remember what I got.
You're probably in the low, like, teens, 12 or some shit.
Do IQs even go that low? Isn't the average about 90?
You're the smart one here, pal. You tell me.
Well, I lied. I'm not really smart. Not in the ways that matter, at least. Like you. You're smart in the ways that matter.
Makes us a pretty good pair then, huh?
Yeah, I think it does.
Think we could take on a good couple people? In a fight? Are you any good at fighting, Tubbo?
Do I look like I'm good at fighting? What kind of question even is that?
Eh, you never know. Thought I'd ask. Wilbur said you were too puny to be useful. I've got to find reasons to prove him wrong.
I've never been in a fight. I always hide, usually. Or get caught up in the crowd. Especially if there's an evacuation order out.
Damn. Well, I'd say in the case of evacuation orders, you'd be pretty safe out there.
Yeah? Why?
Well, you know.
At this point, neither party speaks for about a minute and a half.
I'm only working with you now, you know.
Really?
Yeah, I was pulled off of Wilbur and Phil's workloads so I could focus more on yours. Or, at least, that's what I was told.
Hmm. Well, more time for us to spend together then, my good pal, my buddy.
I guess that is an upside. Less paperwork, too.
I don't have to do paperwork. I'm too cool and important for that shit.
You could help me with mine. Let's see. Filling out names and
numbers.
Oh,
hey, look at the time. It's time to stop listening now. La 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 la. La
la la. Okay, okay,
I can't hear
no
you.
Paperwork.
I can't. How long do we have left now, anyways?
Another half hour or so, I think.
Enough time for a round or two of Mario Kart, you reckon?
Sounds good to me.
At this point, both parties retrieve gaming console devices and play Mario Kart for the next 30 minutes, not holding any real conversation other than mild banter and joking around. Notes.
I'm not sure how to put my thoughts into words here. They're teenagers, is what I want to say. It's not the most scientific thing, but they're teenagers. Still, children developmentally, even if Dr. Smith is a doctor and possesses a propensity for numbers and observation. Personal experience with Dr. Smith also indicates this, which is normal. These are two teenage boys who have been put together in a stressful and engaging environment, so it's really no surprise a connection was made between the two. While I do encourage constant monitoring of their behaviour and conversation, I think that separating them permanently would do more harm than good. If Dr. Smith starts showing any hesitation on the job, or any sign of being manipulated by SCP-2015-13, he will be administered amnestics and moved to a new assignment. Honestly, I'm not worried. Dr. Smith is a good scientist, and engaging with SCP-2015-13 has seen an uptick in both of their moods. Report filed by Dr. Niuchu.
Addendum 1689121 ends here.
For our closing notes, I will say this. SCP-1689-12 has become extremely protective and possessive over the others. He has often referred to them as his charges and boys, and attempts to harm or separate this group has led to violent reactions from all parties involved. For all our sakes, I suggest allowing monitored, minimal contact between them in order to observe where this bond goes. Research forms will be submitted to the site director ASAP.
Report filed by Dr. Flores and Dr. Nihachu et al.
Waxing lyrical. Toby Smith was what most people would call a prodigy. To the Foundation, he was actually pretty routine. He'd been contacted a year ago, 2 months before his 17th birthday, and 1 month before he officially graduated college. He's always had a passion and a knack for numbers and math and observation, rattling off more digits of pi than his teachers had expected. While his English essays were horrendous at best, his maths and physics calculations were at the top of the country. He was, like they said, a prodigy. He was offered a high-paying job with a prestigious but secret company only known as the Foundation. He wasn't told anything else about the job other than the wage and that it would be studying anomalies not too far from his home. It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and one he wasn't stupid enough to ignore. After talking to his parents and debating for a week or two, Toby accepted. Dr. Toby Smith, Tubbo to his friends, entered Site 23 on a Tuesday afternoon, autumn only slightly chilling the breeze. He graduated at the top of his class the previous December and obtained his credentials, then had taken some time off to spend with his family. Due to the secretive nature of the job he'd accepted, he'd been informed that he would have 6 months of no contact, then 6 months off. Room and board would be provided, and other than the intense but worthy studies he'd be conducting, he wouldn't have to worry about a single thing. Or so he thought. Tubbo ducked, avoiding the hit that surely came his way from the anomaly in the room. As it turned out, the Foundation's studies were on all sorts of things. Tubbo, in just 2 weeks, had been assigned to 4 different SCPs, as they were called. None of them had been deemed deadly, though he'd heard the screams of others through the walls, but a few of them were mildly dangerous. Tubbo had learned to duck and weave well in the past few days, especially with this one. A floating rake, with no sense of support, no airwaves around it, and moving at random. It was weird, and any attempt to pin the rake down would leave you with plenty of bruises to show for it. Tubbo already sported a few beneath his lab coat. This time around, however, he had managed to somehow piss it off. After a few minutes of hiding under the table, Tubbo finally decided enough was enough. Out he went, a determined glint in his eyes. He'd never been the sporty type. Tubbo stayed inside for the majority of his childhood, playing video games or working on schoolwork. Regardless, he knew he could throw a mean left hook if he had to. So he did, reflexively punching the handle of the rake as it flew towards him. The rake rattled mid-air, then clattered to the floor. Tubbo stood there for a moment, then brushed off his coat and went to scribble down notes onto his pad.
Subject reacts to physical trauma.
The cafeteria was a safe haven, at least for him. He knew many of the scientists here were antisocial by nature, or at least unwilling to form connections due to the constant threat of death hanging over their heads. But despite the quiet and unwelcoming aura of the cafeteria, Tubbo liked it. He tucked himself in a corner most days during his break, eating whatever he had bought that morning and doodling in a spare notepad he kept in his pocket or playing mini-games on his phone. Today was different. Today, someone sat down across from him, tapping their fingernails onto the smooth blue plastic that made up the cafeteria tables. Tubbo looked up, jumping a bit when the intruder to his space sat down.
Hi.
A woman sat in front of him, with a kind smile and dark hair. 2 strands in the front were shocked to pale bleach, and Tubbo wondered if those spots were on purpose or a side effect of something she'd worked with.
Hi?
He asked more than said, shutting the game he'd been messing around with on his phone. The woman smiled again, and she almost reminded Tubbo of his mum, or maybe his sister, or a mix of both.
You're over here all by yourself,
she said. Tubbo nodded, glancing around the half-empty cafeteria.
I mean, most people are,
he pointed out, and the woman dipped her head in acknowledgement.
Okay, you got me. I was curious. You're pretty young to be here. Are you an intern?
She questioned him with a mild intensity that made Tubbo sort of want to shrink in his seat, but he stuck through it and shook his head. This was a real person job, and this was one of his co-workers. You had to be at least a little weird to get contacted by the Foundation, he thought.
No.
Tubbo reached behind him where his lab jacket sat, tugging his identification key out of the pocket. He held it up.
Doctor.
Damn.
The woman smiled wider, then blinked.
Oh, right. I'm Dr. Nietzsche, but you can call me Nikki.
I'm Toby, but everyone calls me Tubbo.
Nice to meet you, Tubbo.
Nikki gave him another smile, then glanced down at her pager when it buzzed.
Oh, I've got to head off. Projects to check on.
Tubbo gave her a hesitant smile back, nodding slightly as the strangely upbeat scientist gave him a last wave and headed off. Weird. Everything here was weird, but that was the way of the Foundation. Tubbo's lunch break wasn't super long, so sooner rather than later, he found himself with his lab coat back on, heading down one of the halls towards Lab A, the lab he'd been assigned to when not out with subjects or SCPs. The hall was mostly quiet, but as he turned, he caught the eye of someone else who looked just as young as he did. Well, sort of. The kid was heading his way, and Tubbo forced himself to look onwards, ignoring the excited talk and babble of the kid as he went.
Said it was the coolest thing, isn't that right, Alistair?
The kid's accompaniment gave a soft laugh, almost non-existent. Tabu paid the rest of the conversation no mind, keying into the lab and missing the curious glance that was sent his way. The next time he ran into Nikki, she wasn't alone. She flagged him down in one of the hallways as he was coming back from the stupid rake, now sporting a rather nasty bruise under one eye. He got in hit while trying to hit the stupid thing back, resulting in an idiotic-looking fight with a half-sentient rake. Distantly, he wondered what the hell his life had come to.
Tabu.
Nikki's voice snapped him out of his daze, and he tipped his head to find her. Beside her was a taller man, with a complete mess of ginger hair atop his head and similarly red facial hair. He had his hands in his pockets, eyes watching Tubbo with interest as he approached.
"Hi, Nikki,"
he said, giving her a small smile and then nodding at the tall guy.
Hello.
This is Floris,"
she explained, turning to the other scientist.
"Floris, this is Toby, also known as Tubbo. Did you know he's only 17? Working here? How crazy is that?"
"Pretty crazy,"
Floris said, reaching out with one hand. Tabu took and shook.
"Hey.
Nice to meet you,"
he said, swallowing a bit and trying not to let his nerves show.
What do you do here?"
"I'm in the labs, mostly,"
Floris said, hitching a thumb over his shoulder to the room behind him, labeled Lab L.
"I'm on paperwork duty after an incident last month."
"Incident?"
Tabu questioned, and Nikki patted his shoulder a bit.
"He can't really remember. Amnestics were administered after, so whatever it was, it left him with one heck of a broken ankle."
She laughed a little, shrugging as if to say, "It is what it is." Tubbo could not disagree more.
"But we're all fixed up now,"
Floris said, hopping from foot to foot with a grin. Tubbo smiled back, feeling his shoulders relax a bit. Maybe it wouldn't hurt to make a few new connections, if only for the practical benefits. Nikki and Flora seemed nice so far, and if Tabu wanted to last more than a year here, he knew he'd have to have some sort of safety net.
"Incoming!"
A shout from down the hall made all of them jump, Tabu immediately pressing himself to the wall at Nikki's side. If someone was shouting, it generally wasn't good. His reflexes proved to be correct a moment later as a stretcher was wheeled through the hall, twice the size of normal. Tabu stared. A man was on it. But he was big, and tucked under his back were two wings. Outstretched, Tubbo was certain they would encompass the hallway. Even now, with them tucked and folded away, he had to squeeze just to avoid being hit by any part of the anomaly. There was a moment, then, when Tubbo locked eyes with it. Blue, like the boy in the hall from the other day. Tubbo wondered how he knew that Tommy's eyes were blue. How he knew Tommy's name. One moment he was thinking normally, the next he simply had the information. The SCP wrenched their eyes apart, and Tubbo realized his knees were shaking slightly. It felt like a warm blanket had been settled over his entire body and then roughly stripped away. He felt vaguely naked.
"Damn,"
Flora said beside him, causing him to startle a bit. The memory of that uncomfortable gaze was already fading from his mind as he took each breath.
16, 8, 9, 12. They never take that guy out of containment. Wonder what's going on."
"It's probably fine,"
Nikki said, laughing a bit nervously. They all shared a glance, and Tubbo felt mildly sick to his stomach. "It was fine. It was fine," Tubbo reminded himself as he stared at the reassignment papers on his desk. No more sentient rake for him, it seemed. Instead, he had been assigned to continue study with SCP-2015-13. The accompanying picture of SCP-2015-13 was of the boy from the hallway with those bright blue eyes. According to his higher-ups, the Foundation wanted to know what Tubbo could get out of him. As teenagers, they were around the same age despite the clear power difference going into this situation. Tabu was young, sure, but he wasn't stupid. SCP-2015-13 was in a cage. Tabu was not. Was he? The first interaction went relatively well. Tabu sat down at the table, placed the recorder and started it, all avoiding eye contact with the kid.
"I'm Dr. Smith,"
he started out, trying to break the silence with something amiable. After a second, SCP-2015-13 laughed.
Seriously?
He asked, leaning back in the chair until only two legs were on the floor.
Smith? That's so fucking banal, like, there are so many other last names out there and you got Smith. I bet there are 100 Smiths here alone, not to mention all over the country.
Tell me about it.
Tubbo had replied, leaning back in his chair a bit, surprised at the amused outburst, but kind of intrigued.
I'm the one who has to live with it.
Sucks to suck.
SCP-2015-13 fell into silence again, and so did Tubbo. For a minute they were quiet, then Tubbo took a breath and shuffled the few papers he'd brought with him.
Right,
he said, eyes finding the first question he'd had to think of and type up that morning.
Let's start.
SCP-2015-13, or Tommy as he preferred to be called, wasn't all that bad. In truth, Tommy was just a normal teenager, albeit with some interesting abilities. He sat with Tubbo on the floor, 40 buttons in a small tin and two stacks of 20 plastic chairs against the wall. Over and over, they would have Tommy put them away, take them out, put them away, take them out. Other items, smaller or larger, living or dead. Tommy always seemed mildly uncomfortable with the experiments, but Tubbo found that cracking the right sarcastic jokes at the right time got him to loosen up. It helped that they had some things in common as well. A video game they both enjoyed.
I like building things. Helps me think.
The redstone system is just like binary, so theoretically you could build a whole computer with it.
I didn't understand a single bit of that.
Tubbo, with permission, relayed outside news and funny stories to Tommy on the regular, and eventually they were able to play music during sessions, and sometimes when it was over, they would just sit and talk for a bit. Tubbo knew most of these conversations were recorded, since everything the Foundation did was. But he didn't mind. Most of the conversation was mundane at best. Tommy liked it, though. It only took Tommy 2 weeks to refer to Tubbo as his friend. And if Tubbo started returning the sentiment, well, that was only for himself to know. Occasionally, Tommy would refer to the other SCPs he knew. After some digging and reading of files, Tubbo pulled together a somewhat cohesive document detailing their interactions, their relationships, and anything else he could get on the floor. Tommy said they called themselves Sleepy Boys.
No, Tubbo, with an I. B-O-I-S, dumb shit.
And the group consisted of Tommy, SCP-168912, SCP-23912, and SCP-2538, also known as Phil, Wilbur, and Technoblade.
Why is his name Technoblade?
Tubbo asked one day, and Tommy just gave a non-committal shrug.
Dunno. The dude's overdramatic as hell. Like, the hair and stuff? All fake. He just likes to make an entrance and a scene when he can.
Tubbo knows that Tommy trusts him. It starts to hurt, writing down everything he says, detailing every bit of his mannerisms in shorthand in his notepad. If he forgets to write a few things down, well, no one can blame him. Tommy had just gotten a second Xbox controller, after all, and Tubbo hadn't played a round of Mario Kart in a long while. The notes could wait as long as he kept up the document. As long as he kept up the document. Tubbo's second encounter with the SCP known as Phil went as such. A boy woke up late at night from a nightmare that he could not remember upon waking. With nothing else to do, the boy donned his lab coat and keycard and made his way down dim halls and into his lab. As he sat at his desk, an alarm started to blare and a code was called. Tubbo was certain he was going to die when he saw SCP-2538. There was blood dripping off a long blade in his hand. Red, human blood. His face and shirt were stained with it. He'd been trying to make it out of the building before getting caught. Unfortunately, he hadn't made it in time. Cornered against a door to an empty and locked containment center, Tubbo closed his eyes and waited for a blow. None came. Instead, there was a soft brush of feathers against his cheek.
No,
said a voice, and Tubbo distantly recognized it from videos and recordings he'd pored over.
Not him.
You never let me have any fun,
said the second voice, and when Tubbo opened his eyes, he could see SCP-2538 holding the blade out in front of himself, pointed right at SCP-168912, who was in front of him, protecting him. SCP-168912...
No, no, his name is Phil,
a voice in the back of his mind mutters, pushing to the forefront with ferocity. Simply stared down at the blade, unflinching.
You know that is not true at all,
Phil said, and SCP-2538 huffed something that could have been a laugh.
Go, have some more fun, just not this one.
Fine.
SCP-2538 slung the blade over his shoulder, turning on his heel. The cape he wore was ragged at the ends and mottled with darker blots of maroon.
See you in a month or two.
Phil didn't respond, and Tubbo was trembling so hard he thought he might throw up. Or die, or pass out. Any of those options were viable at this point, and the feeling only intensified when Phil turned to look down at Tubbo and cocked his head to the side slightly.
Now that's not right,
he commented, leaning down and gently scooping Tubbo up in his arms. His size made it easy. Tubbo vaguely noticed that Phil's hands were also painted in blood.
Calm down. Everything's going to be okay. I know.
The warm blanket feeling coated his mind, melting down his spine and into every extremity until even the idea of moving or running or being scared was simply out of the question. Tubbo was fine. Tubbo was safe. Phil wasn't going to hurt him. There really wasn't any other choice than to accept it and to cling onto Phil as he moved through the halls of Site 23. After a bit, Phil set Tubbo down on the ground once more. His knees were steady again, and, curiously, the warm blanket that had weighed him down at first now seemed to be gone. His mind was clear, but he still wasn't scared, even when he turned around to face Phil, staring up at him with his head tipped back.
Thanks,
he said, because he wasn't sure what else to say. Phil just smiled.
You're one of mine now,
he said, and it sounded sort of like a promise. Tubbo didn't even want to bother to try and think about what he meant.
Also, I stained your jacket. Sorry, mate.
Oh!
Tubbo lifted his arms a bit, peering down. Phil had indeed stained his coat, red smears from being picked up, tracking down the sides of it.
It's okay. I have more.
Good.
Phil smiled at him, tipped his head, and then turned and went right back into his containment center. Huh. Tubbo stood there for a moment at the door, then swiped his keycard over the panel and locked it. Phil said nothing, just watching him from inside the door, and, slightly unsettled, Tubbo headed back to the lab. Things changed after that. Tubbo still conducted interviews with Tommy. Nikki and Flora still hung out with him whenever their lunch breaks coincided. Tubbo once talked SCP-23912, also known as Wilbur, down from charming a whole room of scientists and was commended for his bravery. Apparently, he was up for a promotion soon if things kept going the way they were. He was thriving. And he hated it. He hated watching Tommy sit in his rec room day in, day out, only let outside on occasion like a dog. He hated passing by Phil in his containment room and watching his wings flutter slightly, like they might catch a non-existent breeze. Even Wilbur, who Tubbo knew thought he was dumb and easy to manipulate, occasionally got this awful, sad look in his eye. He hated it, and he hated what the Foundation was doing to them. They were creatures too, and they weren't hurting anybody. For the most part. Incidents aside, Tubbo knew what they were doing wasn't right. People weren't meant to be locked in a cage. He kept these thoughts to himself, and instead drew up the quickest ways around the site in his spare time. Instead, he slipped these drawings to Wilbur one day under the plate of sushi he'd requested. Instead, he passed knowledge between the three SCPs and wrote down their every move, except the important ones. It was a Wednesday when Tommy casually told him,
"Hey, Techno's gonna be here tomorrow."
It was a Thursday when he passed his keycard over Tommy's door, tossing him a kitchen knife and watching it disappear in midair as Tommy inventoried it. It was Thursday when he and Tommy made their way to Lab A after releasing Phil and Wilbur, and it was Thursday when he set loose a code that would destroy 90% of the data they'd collected over the last few months and corrupt any personnel file that tried to access it. It was a Thursday when Tubbo was once again picked up by Phil and got to see what Site 23 looked like from above. It was a Thursday when he learned what it meant to be free. Incident Report 122201. On the 7th of SCP-2538 was sighted on the grounds of Site 23 at approximately 21:19. While not yet in Containment Facility 56, he was headed in that direction. All attempts to stop SCP-2538 were met with intense focused defense, wherein the subject kept on his straight march towards the facility where SCP-168912, 2015-13, and 23912 are kept. At 21:26, the front doors to the facility were breached. Code Red had been called the moment 2538 was spotted, and Foundation personnel were in the process of locking down the facility and evacuating. At 21:30 exactly, SCPs 168912, 2015-13, and 23912 broke out of their containment all at once with the aid of Dr. Smith and his keycard. This breach initiated another code, wherein more MTF units were deployed from the site center. The subjects met up inside the facility at approximately 21:35 and made their way to the second courtyard to what is assumed to be a predetermined location. All attempts to stop them at this point were futile, with personnel being left behind, bleeding and injured. At 21:38, a call was put out to pull back all Class C and above personnel and to avoid the subjects at all costs. At approximately 21:40, surveillance signals coming from the facility were blocked and no visuals could be taken of the fight until after. By reviewing footage after the fact, it can be seen that the group split up at approximately 21:43, with SCP-2015-13 and Dr. Smith heading for the first floor A laboratory, while SCP-23912 headed back to its containment room. SCP-168912 remained in the courtyard and united with SCP-2538 at around 21:46. The group unites in the second courtyard by 21:53, and the last visual is on SCP-168912, SCP-2015-13, and Dr. Smith. By 21:55, all traces of the group are gone, and the facility is picking up the pieces. An MTF team is sent out in search of any of the escaped SCPs, but no sign of them has yet been found except for a singular feather shed by SCP-168912 at some point during the escape. In total, the containment breach lasted 36 minutes. In these 36 minutes, there were 204 casualties, with 146 dead. The following is a recording pulled from security cameras outside the facility's recreational or lunch outside courtyard of SCPs 168912 and 2538 conversing. Access restricted to level 4 personnel and up.
You're here. Fucking finally.
Well, excuse me for not coming sooner.
I thought I was going to have to clutch this on my own, and carry Will and Tommy out with me.
Come on, I'm not that...
It's fine, you're here now. Tommy is inside with his little scientist friend in the coat. Wilbur's in the second hallway to the right, beyond his room.
I'll get Wilbur. You get Tommy.
Fine by me.
Timing. Meet me back here in 5 minutes.
At this point, the voices become inaudible, then resume 6 minutes and 15 seconds later. The voices of SCP-2015-13 and SCP-23912 can now also be heard, as well as Dr. Smith.
That was so fucking dope.
Don't thank me yet.
Tommy, come here. And you too, little one.
This seems a little unsafe, maybe.
You will not fall, I promise.
Yeah, just make sure not to let go, or you'll definitely drag him down. Phil hasn't flown in a while. My bet's on 3 miles before he conks out entirely.
I'm entirely capable, thank you very much.
We're losing time. Let's go before these idiots come back with more body armor.
At this point, the recording is corrupted, presumably due to recording SCP-23912's voice while his ability is in use.
Time to go. Will can't do this for too much longer. On three. One, two.
Wilbur, we have to go.
Yeah, let's.
The recording ends here, and no more voices are picked up. Eyewitnesses report that SCP-168912 was seen in the sky with two shapes in his arms, presumably SCP-201513 and Dr. Smith. Previously thought to be decorative, the wings on his back were allegedly supporting all three of their weights. SCP-2538 and SCP-23912 were not picked up on any cameras after this point, even around the perimeter. Their whereabouts are currently unknown.
File concludes with Site Director's notes.
Honestly, I am done with this whole thing. After I came on as Site Director, I was briefed about these four and the apparent bond they shared. I knew how they worked, how they spoke, how they fought. Even SCP-2538 was being more carefully studied, if from a distance. But this latest escape attempt has just shot every experiment and observation we'd crafted into the dirt. They'd been making us up a story, trailing us along a false narrative and using it against us to coordinate this escape. It takes immense amounts of strategy to play that far ahead, and I suspect the mastermind was 2538. That's not to discredit any of them, of course. I personally saw 2015-13 take out a few agents right in front of me yesterday, although 168912 did not seem happy when he did. They even roped Dr. Smith into their games, and he's gone now. No idea if he'll ever return, or if he's alive. I hope he is. A crazy bastard. I knew that kid was too smart for his own good. As Site Director of Site-23, I'm officially shutting down the containment efforts of these four. While I encourage Foundation members to be on the lookout, I don't think any of them pose a threat to society as it stands. Together, while deadly against us, I think they are even less dangerous against regular people. We were the threat in their eyes, so we had to be taken out. The 146 dead agents we have on our hands today show us that they are certainly capable of it. But these subjects have shown no hostility toward anyone they deem not a threat, and therefore I'm ending this line of research in favor of protecting the remaining staff members here on site. God help anyone who tries to hunt them down or hurt them. It's not worth the fight. Inessa Vinay, Site Director.
The end. Thank you from everyone who worked on this project for listening. This podfic has an alternate ending which is in a separate file, and we've also included a bloopers reel for your listening, pleasure. I very much hope you enjoyed, and thank you again.